This piece was brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. HeritageFoodsUSA.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is the news.
We bring you a panel of notable food and culture personalities to discuss stories that all start with that one time I was wasted. As we learn through their experiences, the results of an intoxicating evening are predictably messy and often problematic. But you know what else is actually messy and always problematic? Food waste. So we'll turn the tables with our panelists to talk about the sobering realities of food waste and what it takes to make a more sustainable food system. This panel was recorded at Bonnaroo Arts and Music Festival 2015 and moderated by Allison Hamlin.
Hello, everybody. How you guys doing? Yeah? Just that good? Like, not better? You guys are at Bonnaroo. Come on. All right. That's a little better. Well, I want to thank you all for being here today. We are Heritage Radio Network. We are a food radio station broadcasting out of Bushwick, Brooklyn. We broadcast in the back of a pizza restaurant in a shipping container. So we're a little weird, too, but super excited to be here today to give you guys a panel about getting wasted, something that maybe somebody out here has happened. So I'm really excited to introduce my panel and hear from my right, your left. We have Emily Torgrimson.
You did it.
Oh, it's the most nervous I've been saying a word today.
By the end of it, everybody will be able to say it.
Amazing. And she is the executive director for Eat for Equity. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, we organize community feasts for a cause. So we invite people to eat, drink, give whatever they can, and support a different nonprofit each time. And we use local and organic food. We make food together with volunteers. And we're actually hosting another Bonnaroo's dinner under that pergola right there later tonight at 6 o'clock. So we hope you join us.
All right. Very good. And to her right is Anna Borofsky. She is the owner of Clean Vibes. If you guys have seen anyone around here picking up trash, it is because Anna has asked them to do it and they have volunteered. So a big round of applause for her. Woo. Anna, do you want to tell us a little bit more about Clean Vibes?
Sure, absolutely. Ever since the first Bonnaroo in 2002, we've been in charge of all things trash, recycling, and compost at Bonnaroo. From the trash talker volunteers that we have to our on-site composting to just really trying to divert as much waste as possible, we've over the last 14 years just continued to develop. You know, this is the city of Bonnaroo, so we've been working on developing a very comprehensive waste diversion program for the city.
All right, good up for that. To Anna's right, we have Eric Munoz, who's the senior policy advisor for Oxfam. Tell us a little more about Oxfam and what you guys do here at Bonnaroo and out in the world.
Sure. Oxfam is a global organization seeking to end hunger, poverty, and injustice. We're a confederation, so there's 17 Oxfams around the world, including Oxfam America, based here in Boston. And we work in more than 90 countries on issues like agriculture and food security and supporting small-scale food producers around the world.
Amazing. And last, but certainly not least, is my colleague, Jack Inslee, also from Heritage Radio Network. Jack is our executive producer, and he spends most of his time in the studio working with our guests and their personalities. So, Jack, tell us a little more about your background and what you're doing here at Bonnaroo.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Allison. Like she said, I help run Heritage Radio Network. If you listen to one of our 40 podcasts, more than likely you'll be greeted with my voice at the top, reading you a commercial. I'm also here, though, with Roberta's at the Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Barn, and we've been throwing parties all weekend long. They're serving delicious garlic knots, and I am with Full Service Parties, so we're a DJ crew from Bushwick, Brooklyn also. Come visit us if you're able to.
All right. So now you know who everybody is. We're going to do something a little bit different today. Everybody knows about how important managing your waste is in terms of sustainability, but we thought we would take a little bit of a different perspective because we know that sometimes waste is hard to get into. It's a little bit of a dry subject, but what is juicy is to talk a little bit about everyone's drinking stories. So We're going to do that for a little bit, and then we'll turn the tables and talk a little more about the implications of what happens maybe after the party is over and what you guys can do to help make the world a little more sustainable. So, Emily, we'll start with you. If you want to tell us a story about one time when you or maybe somebody else got wasted.
This one time... So Eat for Equity, we organize these community feasts for a cause, and we cook big meals out of home kitchens. I've been doing this for almost 10 years, but back when I first started doing Eat for Equities, I was hosting them in my own home. So I'd cook a huge meal out of my own kitchen, accumulated stacks of cutting boards and bowls, and I pride myself on being a good cook, so I had a good kitchen to support it. Well, we started doing rotating dinners where we were in a different house to support a different organization. And that was one way that we started to build our network, is people were much more likely to go to my friend Jane's house, or their friend Jane's house, to support an organization that they knew about than they were to go to their friend Jane's friend's house and that she said it was going to be cool. But the very first dinner we ever did in someone else's home was at my friend Jane's. I show up ready to make 50 hamburger buns and 6 homemade apple pies, and I asked Jane where her rolling pin is. She doesn't have one, and she only has one cookie sheet. And so instead of panicking, I look around the kitchen, scanning for anything that I can use, and I see a half-open bottle of wine. So I think, well, let's just drink it and use it as a rolling pin. So that's exactly what we do. We share the bottle of wine, we roll up our sleeves, and we start rolling. 6 apple pies, we put hamburger buns on every single horizontal surface, on top of the piano, on the bookshelf. The buns are rising all over the house. The cat gets into the flour. But it turns out to be a great experiment, because people came to that Eat for Equity who wouldn't have come to a party at my house. They had a big meal, they gave whatever they could, and they met someone new. They were much more likely to come to the next one and to be part of that growing community. So that's one time I got wasted. That turned out to be a good, creative kitchen opportunity.
All right. And you got a half a bottle of wine out of it.
Yeah, I'm relaxed a little bit into it.
All right. Well, Anna, I expect that you see a lot of party behavior, perhaps, in your line of duty.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So I expect that you maybe have a story to tell us about
sure.
that.
Well, I could probably tell a couple hundred stories in 16 years of picking up after all of you and, you know, a couple million of your closest friends that have gone to these festivals. In terms of personally, while I definitely had a history of being a partier and having fun, I was always the line drawer with my friends. I was always the one, when they cross the lines, to say, come on back, here's the line, let's not cross it. So no real stories for me that are worth telling. But, you know, there's just countless ones, you know, from the, when we're checking in our volunteers on Monday morning and we notice that there's actually a person asleep in the giant pile of recycling next to our check-in tent. Who I guess thought that was a good place to sleep for the night. Really the list goes on and on. But in terms of inspiration for me, really it was the first time that I went to a large festival in the role of cleaning up after it, that seeing everyone in their, you know, in their state of the after party mode and seeing how much waste was created there from that wastedness was really what inspired me to try and turn something around there and create from that wastedness something positive, to have it not just be a bunch of hypocrites, but to have it be, you know, a place where we can really create change and to educate.
Did you just use the term hypocrite?
Yes, just that's HIPPIECRIT. Hypocrite.
Can you give us a definition of
Do
this
I
word?
Do I really need to?
Well, I would just like to hear
yes.
it for the record.
Well, we've got hippies and we've got hypocrites and we've got a whole lot of hypocrites. Someone who, you know, walks the walk, but who talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk. Who, you know, says that they preach peace, love, and happiness, and, you know, are throwing their litter on the ground, and, you know, not actually living the hippie mentality. So. sadly, there's all too many of them out there, but, you know, all we can try and do is to take the crit out of all of them, so.
To taking the crit out of the hippies.
Yes.
All right, I can drink to that.
Cheers.
Eric, your turn. Tell us about a time where you or somebody you knew had a wasted moment.
Well, so there I was staring at a police officer in Maputo, Mozambique, trying to explain to him in English, he only speaks Portuguese, after a night of drinking with my colleagues, why I'm there, and why he shouldn't arrest me and take me to jail because I didn't have my passport on me. Luckily, I got away. But I was there because we were working with local communities in the north of Mozambique, small-scale food producers, people who are growing on just an acre of land or 2 acres of land, and who are making their livelihoods out of that. And we were there to support them, to understand the situations that they were facing, what kinds of challenges they were having in being able to produce enough food for themselves and their families, and some of the bigger challenges around how the government was interacting with them at the community level, whether that was about the kind of agriculture extension services they were getting, or the land rights that the community was seeking to demand from the government, and the pushback they were getting from the government about, you don't own that land, that's our land, and having to try to navigate with them and with that community that conversation to make the government more responsive. But that's really what Oxfam is all about, community level engagement in rights-based advocacy to get governments to take responsibility for what they should be doing in terms of supporting rural populations and small-scale producers. So that's what the GROW campaign for Oxfam is all about, and that's why we're here at Bonaroots to spread that message and to get all of you to recognize that we can be part of the solution, not just at the community level here, but also globally as well.
Thank you. That's definitely worth staring down a policeman in Mozambique. So,
my Portuguese is not good.
Okay, Jack, tell us about a time. Maybe a time where you made some bad choices.
It rarely happens. Well, this is a sad story. I'll take a left turn here. I got a chance to DJ a party for a friend of mine from high school. Now, I hadn't seen anybody from high school for a good 10 years, maybe. So it's kind of like a high school reunion of sorts. And the gig is in Midtown, New York City, where if any of you visited New York, you know what Midtown is like, you know, center of the city. And I'm really excited. I bring all my equipment. I DJ this fundraiser he's throwing for actually a male dance advocacy organization called Real Men Lift Women. So all these people see me from high school, first time in 10 years. It's wonderful. They're like, wow, you're so cool. You're DJing. Look at this. And I'm riding high, and I'm having the free drinks, because most of the time DJs get paid with free drinks. You know, we don't really get paid. We get free drinks. So that's a caution in itself. Anyway, I'm so excited to bring all these people back to my apartment and show them my cool Brooklyn apartment. And I'm so excited that I rush out of the venue with all of my stuff, and I'm like, come on, guys, let's get a cab. Everybody comes back to the apartment. We're having so much fun. We continue to drink. I wake up the next day, and I'm like, my computer must be in the other room. I'm looking around. I left my computer on the street. By the cab. And my computer had all the music I had made over the past 5 years, all my DJ music. So it was absolutely devastating. And the real moral of the story is to have a plan in place. See, I didn't run backups on my hard drive, which is what you have to do as a DJ. You have to back up everything you have, which I do now, and I've taught everybody on our team to do now, so that will never, ever happen again.
Okay. So what I'm getting from everybody's story is a little bit of a flair for who you are and what you do, and maybe some times where there was an intersection of either good or bad behavior associated with drinking. But I'm just a little curious, and maybe we'll start back over where we started with you, Emily. You know, what first drew you to this field, you know, of working with people? Obviously, people are fun and interesting, but you know, Eat for Equity really revolves around the links and the ties between people, and so I'm curious about what kind of motivated you to start that party.
For me, it's all about connection. I just think that when you get together with people around the table, you share something about yourself, you hear a story about someone else, you learn what makes someone tick. You're able to connect to the person next to you, where the food comes from. Also, when you're chopping together with someone else, all of our meals are volunteer made, and I think there's something really great about when you're chopping onions and I've got the peppers and you saute it and you're cooking the beans and we're working together and have a lot of fun and making something whole together. I think that's really powerful. But for me, I mean, it really started, I grew up in Hong Kong, so for me, food was this way of connecting to other cultures and other communities. And then we moved to a farm in southern Minnesota. I didn't know anything about food at that point. We learned we were moving to America. I asked if I could get a horse. My brother asked if we could plant bacon seeds. And so we soon learned where bacon came from, because we had 4 pigs as an experiment. And again, we were like, let's name them Porky and Petunia. And my dad said, well, you go ahead and name them, but you should name them Pork Chop and Bacon and Sausage, because that's what is going to happen to them, kids. And again, it was like we had a really sharp, really slow learning curve, at least for me. As we sat down to Easter dinner and a big ham, and the pigs, we knew that the pigs had been butchered, and I still didn't make the connection that this was Porky that I was eating, until my aunt said, oh, is this Torgrimson potatoes, and these Torgrimson salad greens, and is this Torgrimson ham? And immediately I shoved my plate away. I'm indignant that my parents haven't told me. I mean, you know, it was just like, it took me a while to really make the connection between where my food came from and what I was putting in my body. But once that connection was made, it was in there. I realized that food was this creative outlet for me. Started to make connections about the people who were raising my food and the environment in which they were raised, and it became a really powerful one for me. So cooking became this natural creative outlet. I mean, when you're an 11-year-old stuck in a farm for the summer without cable, one of the things that you can do is you can go pick berries and turn it into a cobbler. You can raid your pantry, make a mess of the kitchen, and make chocolate mousse. And so that, for me, food became this creative outlet. And I think thinking about your refrigerator, the contents of your refrigerator, as a prompt for experimentation and creativity can actually help you limit food waste as well. If you can get your brain thinking about, oh, what can I do with that beet and that egg and that rind of Parmesan, you know, you can save yourself a lot of money, you can limit the food waste that you create, and you can become a pretty darn good cook. So.
All right, I'm hungry. Speaking about a little bit of multiculturalism and some world hunger issues, Eric, I want to throw this your way, because I'm curious, and I think people maybe would benefit with a little bit of a conversation about how Oxfam, you know, the major issues that you guys are seeing out in the world hunger kind of field, and how your organization is working to alleviate that problem kind of at home and abroad.
Sure. So when we launched our Grow campaign 3 years ago now, we wanted to do 2 things. We wanted to raise awareness about the fact that the people who grow our food often are the most hungry and vulnerable people in the world. And we also wanted to raise awareness about the fact that those very same people deserve and demand not only a respect, but a respect for the rights that they should hold as citizens of whatever country they live in. And we know that not just to do that, we don't just have to work with the producers themselves to inform producers and support producers in the work that they do, but we have to work with governments. So advocating for change at the national level and the community level in countries around the world is a primary focus of what we do. And we also recognize that we have to work with companies. Some of the biggest food and beverage companies in the world have supply chains that end in the United States, but begin in places like Vietnam or Cambodia or even South Africa. And they're supply chains that are directly influencing or impacting small-scale producers. And so we have to work with those companies as well to get them to recognize that they have a responsibility in those supply chains. And they can't simply say, well, that's a subcontractor of ours and we don't have any control over them. No, if you're Kellogg's, if you're Nestle, if you're Mars, if you're Unilever, you have a global responsibility and you need to step up to the plate. So our campaign is all about sort of working to understand the challenges that those food producers face in a very real way, going down to the village, sitting down with them, working with local organizations who directly interface with those farmers, farmers' unions in those countries, and saying, what are the challenges you face and how do we help you to fix them? That's our model. That's the way we aspire to work. And when we work well as a global organization, we can demonstrate real impact. We can change the way that companies behave. We can change the way that governments behave. And that's ultimately what we think makes the kind of impact we see as necessary, not just to help eliminate poverty, right, but to address some of the biggest environmental issues, including climate change, that we face right now.
That's incredible work. Speaking of companies, I want to send this your way, Anna, because I hear this is your 14th year here at Bonnaroo,
yep.
And obviously there have been some challenges and changes and growth along your way, but I wanted to hear a little more about what the process looks like for you around preparing for a festival, and what goes through your mind as you prepare to work with 80,000 people and all of their food waste.
Sure. Well, it's obviously over 14 years, it's been a huge growth and process. When we were in 2002 trying to set things up, trying to contract with local waste haulers, our biggest challenge was finding someone who would actually even take the recycling. They'd say, recycling? You know, the landfill's right down the road. Why are you trying to do this? And it was really hard to, you know, get anyone on board, but luckily we found a facility that was great to work with in Chattanooga. And then it was 3 or 4 years later that we started incorporating the composting element into the festival. We worked with a compost facility in Knoxville for a few years, and then 1 year, a month or so before the event, we found out that they were no longer going to take food waste. So we said, well, I guess we'll just kind of make a big pile here on site and see what comes of it. So here we are, I think, almost 8 or 9 years later from that, and that's what we do. All the food service items on site are compostable. They all get collected by our crew, as does all the prep food waste in the back from vendors and caterers. And it just goes to an area back in the back of house and gets mixed with wood chips. We've got a tractor running, mixing things all day and night long. And it sits there, gets turned a couple times throughout the year. And then it's spread out to help feed all these trees and everything. So it's just really a perfect closed loop cycle that kind of came about out of necessity, because we, you know, our typical method of dealing with it wasn't something that we could do. So,
wow. Yeah. Guys, your trash is growing trees right now. That's pretty amazing. It's really impressive. And thank goodness, because I think there needs to be some shade here.
Yes.
Jack, I want to send this your way, because you spent a lot of time in our studio talking to chefs, talking to nonprofit organizations, talking to kind of the change makers and the thought leaders in this space. And I'm curious to hear if you have any examples or thoughts that come to mind, lessons that you've learned from being in that space.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. So before I came on with Heritage, you know, I grew up on fast food. I couldn't even tell you what composting was. 6 years later, as Allison said, kind of meeting organizations like all of you and hearing all of these stories, the big takeaway for me is that communication is probably the biggest and one of the greatest agents for change. A lot of times I feel like the sustainability worlds and the food worlds live in silos, and everybody kind of talks to each other, and it's like, what you're doing is great, what I'm doing is great, what we're doing is great. But everybody eats. Everybody eats. And I mean, that's something that we're trying to do at Heritage Radio, is kind of expand this conversation past the foodies and past the people that know about these things. Because, you know, the more you can share, the more people's worlds will open. And I'm a perfect example of that. I mean, I ate chicken parm, I think, every meal before I came to Heritage Radio. In a few weeks on the job, you're like, oh, Alice Waters is asking me to have Hen of the Woods mushrooms. I guess I'll try it. And then your whole world opens and you're like, wow, this is, you know, major. So if these are things you're passionate about, share them with everybody in your life. Don't assume they're not interested.
That's great. And I think is the best place to start for my next round of questions here. We'll start back at the beginning. But what is one thing that you think everybody here can do, either as a home cook or as an eater, to reduce the footprint of their waste?
You could get a dog who eats your food. No, so I'm a cook, and I hate food waste. So apparently a former boyfriend told me that was one of the first things I told him about myself, which is kind of weird to hear. Like, hi, I'm Emily, and I hate food waste. I'm not sure how that worked as a pickup line. But yeah, no, I'm just sort of joking about the dog piece. But if you do have a dog who eats food like I do, that's one way to do it. You could also get chickens or pigs. Get yourself a compost bin. Find a way to compost your food scraps. Maybe it's vermiculture in your apartment. Maybe there's a place that you could drop it off at a community garden. If you don't have a place in your own a building. So I think composting is one of the first things that you can do to help with food waste. The other thing is to get creative about what you do with that food in your refrigerator. A few ways to do that. You know, if you're making something at home, if you cook, awesome. Say you're peeling carrots and you're peeling onions to make in a soup. Throw those into a pot, get it boiling. You can make your own stock and get the most out of the food that you've already bought. Chop things up. You can freeze things right away before they go bad in the back of your fridge. Again, it saves you time. It saves you money. It's good for the environment if you can get the most out of the food that you've already made. You can freeze herbs. You can freeze oils. You can freeze coffee. You can freeze juice. Freeze coffee in ice cubes. It's a really easy iced coffee to make. I think just maximizing the way that you use food in your own kitchen can be great for yourself and for the environment.
Anna, is there something that people here at the festival can do to reduce what you take away from the farm and their food waste footprint?
Sure. Well, I mean, the biggest takeaway, I think, is just the educational piece. We always say that if we're here on a farm in Tennessee and we're recycling and composting on the level that we can, none of you have any excuse not to do that at home. Every single one of you should have your own compost bin, should have whatever it takes. Whether it's, you know, city living and finding the right system, whatever it is, you know, we can all do it. It's all something that we can do. And I think that, you know, without question, what I'm most proud of what we've accomplished at Bonnaroo is that educational component, is people who really, they come here for the party and they leave with a sense of responsibility and a sense of knowledge about what they can do. And I think that makes a huge, huge impact.
You take that with them after Absolutely. They leave, for sure. Eric, I have in my hand a pamphlet from Oxfam that says, "Fight World Hunger Starting at Your Kitchen Table." What is Oxfam's stance on what I can do at my kitchen table to help end world hunger?
So Emily started off with a great one, right? Compost. Talked about it. The one that I'll add to the mix is maybe heretical to some. Meatless Mondays, one day a week, go without meat. Agriculture is a big contributor to greenhouse gas emissions, that the gases that are contributing to climate change, right? And within agriculture, livestock production is the biggest component, single component of greenhouse gas emissions within agriculture. So nobody's saying you have to completely give up meat, but be conscious of what you're consuming, how much you're consuming, and maybe one day a week you decide, you know what, I'm not gonna have that steak or that piece of chicken. If you do that, you will be playing a really important part in reducing the overall footprint that agriculture plays in contributing to climate change. And that's important not just right now so that we have a cleaner environment for everyone, but it's important for future generations, for your children and your children's children, so that they have enough food to eat and that they have a clean environment to enjoy.
Thank you. Jack, I'm curious to hear if you maybe have an example of a chef or, you know, someone who is doing some work in the food space that you particularly admire and why that is, and maybe what a little more about what they're doing with food waste.
Certainly. I think zooming out a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about Heritage Foods, the company that started Heritage Radio. You're all obviously very aware of the industrial livestock industry and the problems that come along with it. So, you know, think about that when you eat and when you order food. We at Heritage Foods sell goat every October because it's, you know, a lot of the male goats in this country are not used because they're not used for milk, and they're killed and wasted. And that's a campaign we do every October. We call it Goat-tober, where all these chefs in New York City buy goat from Heritage Foods and feature it on their menu. It's an awesome way to raise awareness for this meat that would have otherwise been wasted. So think about the protein you're eating, and if you see goat or lamb on a menu, maybe go that way. That's something that comes to mind.
Goat that way.
All no right. Goat left behind.
That was a bad joke. Okay, guys. Well, we want to give you a chance to ask some questions here. We're going to open this up for a Q&A. Talia will have the microphone. And raise your hand if you have a question to ask any of our panelists. And when you ask, just let us know if there's a certain panelist you are interested in directing your question towards. But we'll do about 10 minutes of this, and then we'll share some last thoughts. So hands in the air if you want the mic.
This question is for our friend from Heritage Radio on the end. So you're a DJ.
Yes.
And you're passionate about food issues. So what's the sweet spot in the middle? Is there a way that you can marry your musical aspirations and your passion for food?
Bonnaroo. There's an incredible food here. No, it's a very interesting question, and it's something I'm seeing a lot more of because I'm going to all these music festivals, and the food and the sustainability programs here are incredible compared to years past. You know, 6 years ago, we weren't having these conversations, really, period, never mind at music festivals. And the two worlds are certainly becoming more married. You're seeing a lot of artists in the music communities hosting food shows. I don't know if you guys have seen Action Bronson. He's this rapper, and yeah, he's got a whole video series on Vice, but it's about food. And I think that's awesome, going back to the earlier point of just making sure that these issues are being promoted everywhere and not just in the silo of foodies.
Anyone else have a question for a panelist?
Hi. Your name is Anna, right? From Clean
Yes.
Vibes?
Yes.
So my question is, how can you avoid being a hypocrite?
Well, you just, if you're trying to present yourself in the way of, you know, loving the earth, taking care of the earth, then actually, you know, then walk the walk. You know, we like to say that people here are generally pretty good at picking up after themselves until the sun goes down, because then people can't see you when you throw that piece of trash on the ground. But guess what? We see it in the morning when we have to pick it all up. So, you know, just be aware of, you know, even after you've gotten wasted, even after you're having fun, you know, still stay true to your values and really, you know, walk the walk of, you know, reducing your waste, reducing littering, and making sure that you're composting and recycling everything you can here.
Gentlemen in the hammock.
Hello. I don't have anyone in particular to ask. I feel like this is part of the dating game. I should ask you about yourself. But my question is about composting. Is there a way to create a compost without attracting rodents?
I'm guessing that's probably going to me. Well, it all depends on the scale that you're looking at. I mean, I live in a fairly rural area, and what I have is just an enclosed compost tumbler. Now, I don't put my meat scraps in there. I have minimal meat scraps, but I don't put those in there just for the pest factor. But you can definitely get enclosed systems, and that keeps the, you know, keeps the rodents out.
Also, in your kitchen too, if you're worried about compost on your countertops attracting rodents, put it in your freezer. It's a great way to keep the smell down and to make sure that no ants or other vermin get at it. So just stick it in your freezer, pull it out when you need to add to it.
Hi, this is for Eric, right? From Oxfam. Awesome. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit about what your on-the-ground work looks like around the world, especially in Southeast Asia.
Sure. One of the major areas of work for us in Asia generally is around rice production. Rice is a major staple grain in Asia, and rice production is a major livelihood strategy for millions of people. So one of the things we focused on in that region is actually helping farmers to produce more crop with less drop, right? So more food with less water, essentially. If you know how rice is generally produced, you use an incredible amount of water for every crop, right? Every season you use. And we have helped over a million farmers in Vietnam alone to adopt technologies, including the system, what's called the system of rice intensification, that reduces water consumption, reduces the number of seeds they use in their fields, reduces the amount of greenhouse gases that they produce through rice production, and ultimately helps improve their livelihood. So what we're doing in Vietnam, for example, is working directly with the government to develop curriculum for extension services. Those are the people who are going out into the rural areas and training farmers on new agriculture techniques that are appropriate for the environment, that are based on agroecological principles of farming, that accomplish all of those sort of, you know, check marks in terms of the environmental sustainability, but also has a social component, so we ensure, and an economic component, so that we ensure that, yes, we're supporting farmers in adopting practices that are going to be better for the environment, but we want to make sure that when we do that, we're not sacrificing their income or the amount of labor they have to put into the fields. We need to balance all of those things. So that's an example in Vietnam where we're working through the government to do that, because we find the government's a really effective partner. In other places where the government may be absent, or the extension systems are weak, or just, you know, things like that, then we might be working directly at the community level with organizations to support farmers and that kind of thing.
We have time for one more question. Any last minute burning thoughts for the panelists? No? Cool.
All right. Thank you guys for your great and insightful questions. We have a little treat for y'all. As a teaser for tonight's dinner with Bonaroots dinner with Eat for Equity and Oxfam, we have a little pimento cheese snack that we're going to pass around. But I want to pass the mic over both to Emily and to Eric to tell us a little more about tonight's dinner. I believe that there are still some tickets left, so if this sounds delicious and wonderful to you, you should head around the corner to the Eat for Equity tent. But I'll let the two of you give us the lowdown on what people can maybe check out this evening.
Okay, so imagine under that pergola, we've got one long table stretched out. There's a seat at the table for you, some friends, and maybe a few strangers, a few cuties that you might want to introduce yourself to. You get served four courses by a team of volunteers. So the first course is some of this pimento cheese, the squashy cheese from a local producer, fresh pickles, grilled bread, strawberry jam, toasted pecans with honey. And that's just the first course. You also get Angry Orchard. We've got a make your own soda bar made with herbs from the Learning Garden, just a stone's throw away at the post office. And the second course is a fresh salad. If you've been craving greens, if you are sick of kebabs, this is the meal for you. We've got fresh greens from Mountain Meadows with a buttermilk dressing, Benton's aged ham, and pickled eggs. The third course is incredible. You won't want to leave your table. We've got grits, barbecue sea island peas from Anson Mills, pulled pork that some people tell me is the best pulled pork they have ever had. So we've done these dinners two nights now. This is our last night. This is your last chance to join us at this incredible feast. with tomato gravy. And then the best course is a buttermilk panna cotta with fresh berries. This is a meal you won't want to miss. This is an incredible Bonnaroo experience. And all the money that you do give goes to support the two organizations that you heard about, Eat for Equity and Oxfam America. I really hope to see you at the table. There might still be opportunities to volunteer for a seat at the table, but really, for the price of a couple kebabs and a beer, you can get yourself a four-course feast served to you in a great community. So I hope you think about joining us at 6 o'clock. If you're interested, again, go around the corner to the Eat for Equity and Oxfam booths. We'd really love to see you there.
All right. Eric, is there anything else you want to add about maybe where your kind of contribution goes and the work that Oxfam is going to be doing with that money?
Sure. So first, thanks to Eat for Equity for partnering with Oxfam. The proceeds from the dinner are split between the two organizations, and we're super grateful for having Eat for Equity as a partner in supporting the dinners and really bringing all of the creativity as well as the muscle to make this dinner happen. So we've got volunteers here who are supporting Eat for Equity in making the dinner happen. They're working behind the scenes as well as front of house. And what will we do with the money? So while you're at the Eat for Equity tent signing up for dinner tonight, which, by the way, will be fabulous, you can visit the Oxfam booth as well, because we're co-located right there, and you can take action for one of the big issues that we're working on right at the moment, which is about how the U.S. addresses hunger overseas. And you can find lots of information over there. But we will take the proceeds from this, and we will use it to do the kind of work that we have been talking about all afternoon, helping support small-scale producers, not just everywhere around the world where Oxfam operates, but even here in the United States in our campaigns that focus on U.S. domestic poverty issues. So we will, you know, use your donation to further the cause of ending hunger and injustice, and you will be part of the solution.
And you'll have an amazing dinner, so you definitely won't be hungry ending hunger, you at a time. Anna, I know you have an enormous crew of volunteers here, and I'm wondering if maybe you want to tell us how, if next year people are interested, they can join you in reversing their hippie criticism by chipping in with Clean Vibes.
Absolutely. We've got, between our during show and our post show volunteers here, we've got almost 1,000 folks helping to, you know, divert as much waste as possible and also clean up after the music stops. So if you guys are interested in taking part in that, we also work at a lot of other events trying to, you know, accomplish the same goals as we do here. Our website's cleanvibes.com. We've got a link to volunteer there. Basically, you pay a deposit that's the equivalent of the ticket price, and then once you've worked with your shifts with us, you get that money back. So not only are you attending the event for almost no money, but you're also really contributing. Instead of just being a patron here, you're being a participant in the effectiveness of our waste diversion system, whether it's sorting compost bags of compost from 7:30 in the morning to 1:30 in the morning, which oddly enough is the first type of volunteer shift to fill up every year, to working with us Tuesday and Wednesday after the show, just helping clean the campgrounds. There's a lot of opportunities, and we find that almost all the volunteers that work with us, it's hard work, there's no question about that, but it makes their Bonnaroo experience that much more significant because they're a part of it rather than just being someone, you know, being a patron enjoying it.
Great. So read hard work, but a more sustainable Bonnaroo for you financially and the campground.
Exactly.
Environmentally. That is a great deal. Jack, tell us where we can hear more of you and more of Heritage Radio Network.
Totally. I hope you guys will all look us up. We're on iTunes, Heritage Radio Network. Everything from Big Frida talking about where she likes to eat in her hometown, from like full-blown life profiles on Michael Pollan, on Alice Waters. We've got 8,000 podcasts on food and sustainability, and it's all happening out of Bushwick in Brooklyn. So heritageradionetwork.org, Heritage Radio Network on iTunes, and get involved. Like, we love working with people in all different places. So if you like what you hear, email us and join the team. And thanks for listening to us now.
Amazing. Also, he hasn't mentioned, but if you want to catch him in full service, which is his DJ crew.
Yeah, I'll be at that barn like until... I won't leave until Monday, so come find us. We're there till 6 a.m. tonight. We're there all day tomorrow. I'll recommend the classic hip-hop set, Selfishly, tomorrow. That's what I'm playing. So come check it out, 5 o'clock.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. I want to give a big round of applause for Emily, Anna, Eric, and Jack for joining us up here and all the work that they're doing to keep this place a little more sustainable. Thank you all for coming. I hope that if you are getting a little bit on the wasted side, you are enjoying yourself and doing so, mindfully. Have a great Bonnaroo, you guys. We'll be back again tomorrow at 2 p.m. We're going to do a little bit of an open mic situation up here, so if you've always wanted to try out your radio voice, we're here for you. Have a great afternoon, and cheers.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.